welcome to Looking Outside. I'm your host, Jo Lepore, and today I'm coming to you live from Sydney, Australia. Australia has the third biggest audience for this show, so shout out to my fellow Aussies. And a huge thank you to the amazing Sarah Owen and Dom Knight for allowing us to use the studio in Sydney for the recording of this episode while I'm in Australia. When I say us, I am, of course, speaking of Arno Vodanu, Group Head Pastry Chef of Black Star Pastry, joining me today to speak about all things sweet in life. Welcome to the show, Arnie.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. All right, this should be a really fun conversation because anybody who knows me knows that I eat dessert for dinner sometimes. I'm not even joking. I am obsessed with sweets. And you do this for a living. How incredible.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, so it's lucky.
It is pretty incredible. It is pretty rewarding. It is pretty rewarding.
Sweet gig, one might say. All right, so tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, as you said, my name is Arno Vodanu. I'm the group head chef for Black Star Pastry. And I've been making pastry for the last 22, 23 years now. So quite a while. Learned the craft in France, in Paris. And then moved my way across a few countries, Switzerland, Vietnam, and landed in Australia 9 years ago.
And you are married.
Okay, we go down that path.
Can't forget that part. Married to a very close friend of mine.
So then I met my wife in Melbourne.
Yes.
9 years, 8 years ago. And now we've got a little son, yeah. André.
Beautiful. So, yeah. Can't wait to meet him after this recording. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And so you've been living in Sydney for how long now?
So Sydney has been 6 years now. So I came to Sydney to take over the lead of Black Star Pastry, which back then was one production kitchen and four stores. And we are now down to two production kitchens and seven stores across two states.
Amazing. That's great, because it was founded in 2008, right? So it's fairly new-ish business that's growing.
With the expansion that we did, 4 or 5 years ago, that's where the business went to another level, from building a brand new production kitchen in Melbourne, having the opening of three stores and expanding the team to a little bit over 100 pastry chefs across the group.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's a big team, but we all in to make sure that we get our customer really, really happy of having our cakes available across both states.
Yeah, amazing. And, you know, I had the pleasure last time I was in Sydney, I think it was, or maybe it was in Melbourne. No, it was in Sydney. Maybe it was in Melbourne.
He was in Melbourne.
Melbourne, that's right. Yeah. We went and did let's call it a tasting. It wasn't really samples. It was full-size cakes. I think I had 10 cakes and they were all delicious. So
thank you.
Highly, highly recommend going and checking that out. So one question that I think would be on a lot of people's minds around what you do as a head pastry chef is, how did you decide to become a pastry chef? Were you always a bit of a sweet tooth growing up, or were you inspired by the beauty of desserts? What is it that really sparked that passion for you?
So at first, I was making cakes at home, every weekend with my mom. I'm talking about me being 13, 14 years old. And then one day I just turned around to my mom and I just said that I wanted to stop going to school and learn the craftsmanship of being a pastry chef. Of course, at 20 years old, the answer is no. I love you, but you need to go further. And then when you get your diploma, you do whatever you want. So for me, it was a deal. So I had to hold tight for 2 years. And then after that, when I got graduated, she pulled a part of the bargain. And she said, yeah, you can just now find your school and find your way, and I'll help you in any way I can. So that's what happened. I went from school to school, just dropped off my candidature, and started in Paris to learn pastry. And then I went on and on, diplomas after diplomas, for 7 years.
And so, I mean, when people think of pastry making or desserts, like the French technique is probably what comes to their mind. Are there other types of techniques of, or is that kind of the best of the best?
So there is different techniques, but I would say for my personal experience anyway, because I learned all the basics in pastry in France, I felt through my whole career that it was probably easier for me to understand other techniques, other way to do things, because for me, I already have the base that I learned through my apprenticeship in France. So it's, I think after that, when we go from country to country, yes, there is new thing coming up. There is a new way to see things and do things. But at the end, if the base is the same, it make it easy. Now, it's not that easy to learn all those basics, but once you got them, I think your job is definitely easier when you need to adapt yourself to the market or to the country wherever you're working from.
Right, or to the cultural...
Or to the cultural.
You know, palates.
Correct.
Of people, what they can and can't. Right, so when you moved, so you moved from France then to...
To Switzerland.
Switzerland.
And basically for me, so in France, I learned in a bakery. Then I moved to a 3 Michelin star restaurant. And then from there, I was head pastry chef for 4 years. And I decided to move on to a new challenge. And that's where I took the lead of the Grand Hotel Kempinski in Geneva, where I was executive pastry chef for 3 years. So it's quite different compared to what I learned and where I used to work. But I guess that's part of the challenge.
Yeah.
Is to grow and learn different things. And then from there, I decided to help a friend down in Vietnam. And I did the opening of Aman Resort in Vietnam. So that was a year. Yeah, that was a year in the making. Teaching the staff on site, make sure that the product is at the level where we need it to be. And then after that, I moved to Australia to do the opening of Biblo down in South Melbourne.
Yeah, I love that brand as well.
So
you've worked at some amazing places.
I can say that for my whole career, I was able to perform at a high level and always happy with the outcome that happened in most of those places. So it's been a great career so far.
And will continue to be a great career, I am sure, with your talents. So I'd love to go back to when you said that your mom had to kind of, you know, give you a little bit of a push, finish your diploma, and then go and do what you want. So then when you became head pastry chef for the first time, how was she surprised? Did she kind of think that it was just a hobby and it might not work out, or did she know from the beginning?
I think on her side she knew. On multiple people's side, they knew. I probably was the one who wasn't confident, because when that position came up, I said no to start with. So it was actually a really interesting story, because I was in Taille au Vent, which was a 3 Michelin star restaurant in Paris. And I make my way through, so I started as a commis, and then worked my way through to sous chef, pastry sous chef. The head chef left and the owner approached me to take over. And I didn't feel that I was quite ready for the position, so I did say no. And when I came back home, and I, of course, had to talk to my mom, and she turns around and said that I was crazy and I was an idiot. Well, I was like, no, I don't feel that I'm ready for the challenge. So didn't want to let anyone down. So the head pastry chef left, and of course I had to take over because I was the sous chef during the interim. And after, I reckon it was a solid 3 months, still no one coming in, I turned around and I requested to talk to the owner. And that's where I felt like, I think I'm ready. So I put my hands up for the position. And he turned around saying that he wasn't looking for a head pastry chef anyway, that he knew that I will be the one.
Wow, there you go.
So that was mind-blowing for me, because I've got that person that trusted me the whole way. And I think it's also helped me to shape my career at this stage. And if I'm here, it's also because of him. Because of him. So, yeah, a big shout out to him. Unfortunately, he passed away years back. But he was, I would say he was my second dad. Really, really fantastic person that could see through people. So I was quite young at that stage to take the lead on a 3 Michelin star in Paris.
Yeah, well, it's incredible how sometimes other people can see what you're capable of before you believe it in yourself. Sure. And you have to be placed in that position and kind of test your limits and your capabilities in that moment. And obviously he saw that in you, and he knew that if you were just like pushed into it, that you would excel, and you have. So that's incredible.
It was a really, really good experience. And that's also led me to stay for the long run. Stay for a long until I needed to do another challenge.
Yeah, definitely. And the other challenge was obviously a part of what you mentioned before around kind of adapting to different cultures. So obviously between France, Switzerland, Vietnam, and Australia, maybe the US one day, you can come and make me some trades. Private pastry chef, maybe.
We never know. there's
obviously adjusting to the palates like we talked about and the market, but also adjusting personally to that cultural change. How did that go for you?
So look, I must admit, when I went to Vietnam, I wasn't really fully prepared because we did open a man resort in the middle of the jungle. So, yes, it seems glamorous on paper, and look, it was fantastic experience looking back, but it was also pretty hard because for me, that was my first time in a country, so needed to adapt myself to the people and to the culture. However, it was a rewarding experience because the team that I had at that time didn't have the skill, and that's where I was coming for, to teach them the skill. And also, I couldn't speak English. So, and they couldn't speak French either. Ah. So it was a year
in trying to...
And yeah, obviously I cannot speak Vietnamese.
Wow, how did you communicate?
So for me, it was all about demonstrating and be able to show them that I care and be patient. And then, well, just teaching them really by demonstrating a lot. And be there in a critical moment, and also showing them that the trust is there. So don't be afraid to make mistakes. It happened, as long as you learn from them. So for me, it was all about setting the team, because my contract is only 1 year, make sure that I set up the whole team to be able to carry on without me and have all the key to open all the doors.
I think that's really refreshing that you say that as well, because you know, that they were allowed to make mistakes and that they were learning and developing, because pastry making seems like such a precise art. You know, like you say when you're making savory food, you can kind of just throw things together and then like, you know, add a bit more salt, add a bit more sugar, whatever, balance it out. Whereas pastry making or dessert making, it seems like a science, like you have to really follow the book. Is that true?
It is in some part very true. And that's also part of the learning. And that's why I said when you've got the basis, you can really make your way because you understand what's happening when you mix one element with another, when it's overweighted and the result that gets at the end, and you understand why and how to fix it. Things that you could have in some instance, I would say. For example, if you're doing a baked dough, which is kind of, when you're talking about savory pies or whatever, it's kind of in between. You realize it requires from the baker, which is on the pastry side, and the savory chef as well, to work together. But then if in the dough recipe you've got a mixed up between sugar and salt, so yes, you will see it straight away in the oven. And that's something that you learn from the basics, and that not necessarily true with savory, because you can get away with it until a certain point. And then after that, unless you test it, you don't know. And yes, in pastry, it's a little bit different. You can see visually that there is a mistake because it's so technical. most of the time, for me in the kitchen, I don't really need to test the product to see that there is a mistake. I can see visually there is something wrong. Then I test it and I go deeper into understanding. But yeah.
So you mean like if something's split or curdled or like the dough hasn't risen the right way, you can just see it straight away?
You can just see it straight away.
Can you see even before that? Like what are some of the other things that you...
Yes, I could. Let's talk about the croissant, for example.
Let's talk about the croissant.
It's a really technical product to have because it requires precise skill. Mm-hmm. One will be the proving. The other one will be the lamination. Mm-hmm. So visually, even before we're talking about proving the croissant or baking the croissant, you can tell if the dough is not right or not just by looking at it or touching it.
Okay.
So that's where, if you've got the knowledge and the experience, you can tell before you even spend time by proving and baking that there is an issue. So yeah, it is quite technical.
Yeah.
It's quite technical, but that also makes the beauty of the work.
Beauty
of the craftsmanship. So yes.
And you know, right? Like, you know, everyone's had a bad croissant. And you just kind of like, you taste it. It's not like, it's not buttery or it's not flaky
something's not quite right.
Or maybe it just hasn't been made to the kind of ideal standards that you're working off. So then how do you inject creativity into that process, which is fairly regimented?
So for me, creativity is not just coming up with the new product, but it goes through also how to make the product using innovation, which for me is also part of the creativity. So how do you get that product with a little bit less labor without compromising the quality of the product at the end? Because there is some part in the production where do you really need to have a skilled pastry chef to do it? That's the question that I'm asking myself every now and then, because there is a labor cost attached to everything. And for me, creativity is not just... it's not just coming up with new recipes. However, creativity for me is through travel. But travel is not only you take a flight ticket and you go right and left. Now with social media, you can really understand what's happening in different countries. People are sharing or more inclined to share what they do, how they do it, how they're making it, which for me, and I'm pretty sure other chefs around, help us to see things differently. So I'm following a few pastry chefs on social media, and I can see sometimes some amazing looking products. Sometimes they're not sharing the craftsmanship, just the final product.
Yes.
Which, I mean, for me, it's fine. I just need to figure out, okay, how they did it. Then we try, it's a trial and error. We try, it doesn't quite work. Why it doesn't work? Okay. Then you go back to your basics. Of course, didn't think about that the first time. That's why it doesn't work. Let's try again. And then we just make it work based on the knowledge that we already have. So, yeah, so everything comes to also sharing the mix of flavor, the mix, the visual techniques. I think once we open ourselves to other people, we can understand and take from them as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Because that's a bit different, because you can actually properly interact with people. Look, you're at the shop, you talk to the head chef, I love that product, how did you do it?
Oh, that's great.
And here we go.
Yeah. Do you ever do that when you're traveling and you're eating a dessert at a restaurant? You're like, oh, can I speak to the head pastry chef?
I did that a couple of times.
Yeah.
But because I was... refer to that chef. So I already have a connection.
Right.
And I'm not randomly just go, can I speak to your pastry chef? No.
Okay, awesome. So what about, you know, having like a bit of a play with desserts at home? Like do you do a little bit of experimenting at home? Or just...
Sometimes I do, or I used to, I would say, because now I'm really focusing 100% on my family.
Yes.
And my little one is taking a lot of my time. which is fantastic. But no, I used to try it a lot. I used to throw away a lot of things as well. Because, yeah, sometimes it doesn't really translate what I had in mind. But I guess that's also the beauty of innovation. You can't just have it right 100% every time you're trying something. But yes, I used to try a lot of things at home and look, it works, it doesn't work. I'm onto something, I'm not. That could also allow me to get my creativity into the right stage.
Is there anything that you would like to make that you don't know how to make, whether it's sweet or savory?
I do have a few products in my head, but at the moment that product is also on R&D. Mm-hmm. So not saying that I don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. It's more like I want to get to that level, which I didn't see anywhere. Mm-hmm. Now, how to get to that level, I will need to try it, but I can't really talk about it at this stage.
Yeah, I can't divulge. Okay, keep your eyes peeled for this amazing product coming. I had a question for you, which is like a really, really silly question. But when you were talking about croissants, going back to that, which like now we're going to have to go and have a croissant after this. I have a French friend, Roma, shout out to Roma, who used to say to me, oh no, almond croissant, chocolate croissant, not a proper croissant. Is that true?
I think we can talk about it the whole day. I guess, on my side, depend exactly what you're asking.
Okay.
Am I evading the question?
Yes. So, you're trying to be polite. You just want to say no. No, it's not a proper croissant. Get out of here with that chocolate.
No, look, it is. I mean, it's part. You're using the same dough. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
So technically, it's still a croissant product. Now, if you are really straight to just having a croissant, yes, the almond croissant, because it's twice baked most of the time, it doesn't fall into that category for me. But you're still eating a croissant at the end of the day. So, yeah, both answers can be right.
Okay, all
depend how you see it.
All right, understood. Which leads us beautifully to a question that I had for you around the different techniques that you learn as a chef. And I know you said you studied for 6 years, which is very intensive. Throughout that process, I know that you studied lots of varying aspects of being a head pastry chef to get you to this point. So it's not just about the baking, but here we go. We were practicing this beforehand. So I'm gonna jump in. Boulangerie, pâtisserie, viennoiserie.
Yes.
Okay. And I know you were explaining to me that viennoiserie is actually a component of boulangerie. So how many different kind of techniques or aspects of pastry making did you have to learn? And is it quite complex?
So look, when you do your apprenticeship in France, you go through all of it. Most of it. Yes, you've got a viennoiserie component, which include croissant, chocolate croissant, almond croissant. Then you've got ice cream making, chocolate making, cakes, which also include different mixes, I would call them, which is sponges, how to make a cream, how to make a mousse, and so on.
Cupcakes?
depending on which country you are.
Okay. Poor man's cake.
But yeah, that's part of it. That's part of it. Choux pastry as well.
I love choux pastry.
And
choux pastry is very hard, isn't it?
It's not as easy as it seems. However, through, I guess, innovation, we're now able to see things differently and make things differently, which makes life a little bit easier when it comes to making choux pastries. So some chefs came with different techniques that makes it more, let's say, easier to make and having a perfect result in any ovens. So that's part of innovation. So those people are also sharing that knowledge because they've been working on it for months or even years, maybe, to get to that result. And then once they got it, they open to share it.
That's great.
And that's where now there is a lot of people these days. Something that simple as putting a crunch onto your choux pastry so then it's perfectly shaped in the oven. That wasn't a thing back in when I was an apprentice. So we were putting water on it, icing sugar, I need to have the right consistency, and all those little techniques. So it was quite tricky to have the perfect choux pastry.
Would a traditional chef argue that you're bastardizing the process by doing all these new innovative methods? Or are they pretty open?
Yeah, potentially. Okay. But for me, I would say that you need to keep up with what's happening around. Like, yes, it's not. So you still need to understand how to make a choux pastry, regardless. That's the basics. Now, if you don't have the texture like fully right, you still have a percentage of error that will be allowed with the apport of that crunch on top. But if you're totally off, even with the crunch, you're not gonna get the result. So at the end, you still need the skill to understand what's happening. And there is also different technique to make sure that you got the right texture. So all together, yeah, it's difficult to miss it. So I think, yes, you've got the basic, you learn that way, but that's part of innovation and accepting creativity as well from other people and help you throughout the making and make sure that you simplify and remove the mistake out of the equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm sorry I interrupted you, but you were going through you were at choux pastry. There's like 7 different types of pastry, isn't there? Is that right? 7? I wrote down 7 types. I don't know if that's right or not. There's probably more.
No, that was pretty much it. Yeah, that was pretty much it because we need to learn also how to temper chocolate, but that's part of it. But then after that, in the years following that apprenticeship, you get a little bit more in detail in all those areas and categories. And then after that, you can decide to go to a different path. And if, for example, you love chocolate and you know that is where you want to go, you just become a chocolatier.
Oh, okay.
So that's where you still have some basics, but then you decide to be specialized in chocolate and that's where you go.
Oh, that's
and same
great.
With the baker. Yeah, separate everything. But I think now you can just go straight into those specialized areas as well.
And the position that you're in is still using all of that knowledge, right? Because
correct.
You're kind of overseeing all of that. Plus you've got a lot of business management as well that you're factoring in to what you do.
Yeah, there is also a management part, a leadership part that is definitely part of my role.
Yeah.
And I guess experience gets you to learn what you want to become because we're not all the same. People manage team differently. But I guess for me, it's really true experience and what I learn and what I feel is right that I'm leading the team at the moment. But that helped me to lead the team at the moment.
Yeah. And it's great that you are where you are after, you know, such an intensive and extensive period of studying and then, you know, working in lots of different countries, you know, so adapting to different cultures. Was there ever a point where you were like, oh, actually, I want to go and do something completely different? Like, was there anything else that you always had in the back of your head as a different career path, plan B?
Plan B, and that was 20 years ago, it was cabinet maker.
A cabinet maker?
Yeah. So totally different.
It's very different.
Totally different, but I love wood.
Oh, okay.
I really love wood and working with wood. But then I also applied for a few schools just in case, you know, backup. But yeah, now I end up straight away in pastry. And if I had to do that again, I would.
And so what's your wife's favorite dessert?
That's a really good question. That's a tricky question. I guess we really go through different phases. At the moment, crepe cake. That's the one. At the moment, the crepe cake is the one at the moment.
Interesting. Okay.
And I'm pretty sure you ask me that question in 3 months, it will be different.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the way to live, you know, because she's got a pastry chef at home. She can change her mind every 3 months.
That's it.
Go and make me this now. Lucky girl. All right. Well, I have one last question for you. So thank you so much for sharing, you know, your journey and, you know, your openness throughout how you got to where you are, which I think is really, really inspiring, particularly because you did know what you wanted to do and you still finished your diploma and then you went and you worked hard to achieve, you know, what you have now. And I especially appreciated the vulnerability of maybe sometimes not recognizing that you are ready for more. And then obviously you stepped into that role, excelled, and look at where you are today, which is incredible. So now you're an expert at what you do and you're, you know, well-known for it, highly credible. So how do you look outside? How do you pull yourself out of your expertise to get a fresh perspective on whether it's pastry making or cabinet making or whatever it might be to kind of get a fresh perspective?
Traveling is key. I used to travel a lot, but as I said, for me, social media these days help you out. It's a fantastic tool, and you can decide to keep and learn from whatever you want. So for me, I would say on a daily basis, pastry is always in my head. So it doesn't have to be related to pastry. I can just walk into a shop, doesn't matter what it is. I was like, okay, those colors work. Mm. It can just be as simple as that. Then if I want to translate it into a cake, how do we make it happen? Like, what type of element? Or you go to a restaurant and you've got a main dish. You're like, oh, okay, I like that spice. How did you include that into a dessert? Because you're thinking that, okay, that will pair very well with that type of fruit or that type of element or texture. But my mind is always thinking pastry, I would say, or cakes.
Yes.
New element, new texture. And also using the cultural aspect of, I get the country I'm in. Because now that's what it is. Like, it's multicultural. Australia is multicultural. So you've got access to different product, different technique, wherever you go. And I think you shouldn't just have your head down and just do your little thing in your corner. Yeah, just look out.
Yeah, I love that. So you're also talking about being observational, right? So you're enjoying the moment, obviously, when you're going out or when you're traveling, but you're also observing and thinking about how can you apply that to
that to what we do? And look, doesn't mean that every time he strike. It just means that my mind is always in a research of doing something new or creating something that will be sensational and people will be able to enjoy as well. So, yeah, at the end of it, for me, it's all about making our customer happy and enjoying our sweets across the board.
I mean, when you're eating sweets, how can you not be happy? There's no excuses. So you do very, very important work to keep people happy, including myself. So thank you so much for sharing your journey and coming on the show, Arno.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, or share the show, and I will see you next time. Until then, keep looking outside.